Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
Yeah.
Are you doing anything this weekend?
Let's see. I'm going to be shoveling dirt.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Into
why?
My garden.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, you're just going to be shoveling dirt from one side of the place to the next?
Yeah, I'm just going to go outside, dig a hole.
And then shovel some dirt.
Shovel some dirt from the hole.
I really
onto
looked
the ground
at my dirt situation. And
I thought, you know, I haven't been shoveling too much dirt. I got to start shoveling
some dirt. I need some more dirt shoveling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. I got a brunch. And then I feel like there's something I'm forgetting, but we'll see.
Best brunch item. What is it?
Potatoes.
Oh, you went simple. I was going to go like elaborate, like omelet with blah, blah, blah. You potatoes.
Yeah, potatoes flat out because straight A, up. Versatile.
Yes.
B, delicious.
Yes. How many times have we talked about potatoes on this podcast?
153. And we haven't had that many podcasts.
Well, here's another one, people.
Yeah, that's right. Potatoes.
Potato.
Mash them up,
so
put them in a stew.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're so good.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, how are you doing? My name is Philip Kerrigan. I'm the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. Joining me is
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
That's correct. Just checking in. Wanted to see how you were chilling this summer. I mean, were things going good?
Yeah. What are you doing this weekend?
What am I doing this weekend? That's a great question. I'm not doing much. I think
you're not going to shovel dirt.
I won't be shoveling dirt. I'll be mowing grass.
Okay.
Because the front lawn needs it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I also will be doing. I'll be grilling, I think, this weekend because it's supposed to be nice outside.
Well, it is June.
It's June, people.
Yeah, that's madness. First of all.
It's summertime.
It is summertime.
It's already summertime. This is bananas.
I've been smelling the barbecues.
Yeah.
You know, you drive down the street after work and you're like, oh, somebody be barbecuing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's already happening.
Yeah.
Barbecuing, of course, look at the segue we just did. Barbecuing, of course, involves food. And today we are talking about food insecurity.
Yes.
If it seems like we've talked about this on a podcast before, it is because we have talked about this before.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that on a personal level, of course, this is one of those this is one of the things that deeply affects me. I really the food thing is a huge deal for me, but overall, the reason why we do more than one of these podcasts is because it's an actual issue.
Yeah. And there are a lot of charities in our program that work with food.
That deal with
in
that.
In one way or another.
Right. Yeah. Because it is, not to get too like deep, like 10 minutes into the podcast.
Are you going to get deep?
Yes, it is a thing that we have been dealing with since we were human beings.
Yeah.
Right? The idea of like food, and not just food as it relates to eating to give your body more energy, but food as a family unit, food as a community unit. Food has always brought people together.
Yeah.
Food has always, you know, cultivated learning. I mean, it's ingrained in everything.
Well, yeah, if you think about having a good time at home or having a good time with your friends and family.
What have you been doing?
Eating.
You eat.
Yeah, you have food. You have some kind of food. You have drinks. You might have something else happening at the same time, but it's always based around food.
Yes, and how many times have you relived a memory, and within that memory is the best dish that was at
that
thing? Exactly,
yeah. So many times, yeah.
Yeah.
I was asked recently about, like, you know, if you had to imagine, like, a safe place, your safest, most fun place. Like, imagine that picture in your head.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, well, I think of, like, a field or something in nature. And I was like, no, dude, food. Like, it's
it's all food.
It's around food.
It's food.
And there's people and there's happiness. Yes. There might be music, but food is the central.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I would consider myself a foodie. I eat a lot of it.
Is that why? Yeah. Not because you're like, I know the difference between a Pinot and a Cabernet.
No, not.
Yeah,
not
there we go. Yeah.
No, not.
I've eaten caviar, three different kinds.
Because I eat a lot of it.
Okay.
Also, I really super love like going to restaurants, trying to new things and all that stuff.
And you like cooking.
And I love cooking, and I love the cooking shows.
Yeah.
So I'm all about all that stuff.
Nice.
And in our community, of course, there are lots of people who struggle with this particular issue every day.
Yeah.
We were joined by Julie Humphreys, the Community Relations and Media Manager for Second Harvest Inland Northwest. They're based out of Spokane, but their service area basically is a huge range of places.
Yeah, it's massive.
The reason why I think it's important to highlight these type of charities, to talk to people like Julie, is because, of course, of the need.
Yeah.
Julie kind of says it in the podcast as you talk. I mean, 1 in 5 kids routinely, that's the routine number, 1 in 5 kids are food insecure. And the definition for food insecurity, of course, is you don't know when your next meal's coming from.
Yeah.
Which is a huge, huge problem that we have this many kids in this country who still don't know where their food is coming from.
Yeah. And if at school what they're getting is maybe breakfast and lunch,
yeah,
that's maybe 2 meals that they can count on in a day.
Right.
No, that's not enough. That's
absolutely
not good.
Absolutely.
Not good enough. We have to do better.
And we know that the schools are struggling with nutrition because people keep making pizza a vegetable or something
right?
Like, so I mean, there may not be getting even the most nutritious stuff.
Yeah.
Which is why places like Second Harvest and the food banks that they serve are so important to the fabric of the communities that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked with Julie about multiple things. We talked about what it is that they do not only for Spokane. We talk about what it is they do for the other areas that they serve. We talked about their incredibly impressive facility.
Yeah.
And their really neat kitchen that we actually had a chance to use. For those of you who saw the Leadership Breakfast video, that is shot on location.
It is shot on Second Harvest. Second Harvest.
Very,
yeah.
Very cool. Very neat of them to do. Before we get into the interview, you have a question, and this is one of my favorite questions.
Is it really?
Yeah, already.
I thought it was kind of silly. I mean, to ask you this question.
No, it is silly for you to ask me this particular question.
Yeah.
But I could talk about food all day.
Yeah. Okay.
So yes, ask.
So maybe I'll have to have some more food conversation.
Food related questions. Yeah. I'm all in.
Okay.
I'm all in.
So Philip Kerrigan, what is the healthiest food you eat on a regular basis?
Well, we're going to have to define healthy and regular.
So regular, I would say if you've eaten something at least twice a week,
Okay.
Now you can define healthy.
Okay.
I'll allow you
to
do
define
this.
Healthy?
Yes.
Okay. So, I'm not going to lie to you. There's not a lot going on.
Yeah.
There.
That's what I thought. Which is why the question is silly.
So the best I can give you.
Yeah.
Is Caesar salad.
Okay. All right.
But here's the funny thing about the Caesar salad. It has to be accompanied by meat of some kind in there, right?
So do you mix it in?
If I'm doing it myself, I will mix it in.
Okay.
Right? And so I run the gamut of the Caesar salad. So I will do chicken Caesar. I will do steak Caesar. I will do smoked salmon Caesar, which is amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Smoked salmon
super
Caesar.
Good.
Huh.
Super good.
Okay.
So, I would say Caesar. I got to tell you, like, my palate for the super duper healthy stuff. Not great.
Is Caesar salad the salad you eat most?
Caesar salad is like by far the salad I eat most. I don't know what it is about the whole Caesar. You know, it's the romaine. The romaine is like a hearty lettuce, right?
Yeah.
And so like it's really crisp.
Yeah.
I'm not into the, I'll eat it.
Yeah, iceberg.
Yeah, if you put a nice salad in front of me with like the arugula and all that sort of stuff, I'll eat
it. Like the softer types of lettuces, like spinach.
I'll eat it, but it bothers me.
Yeah.
It'll bother me the entire time I'm eating it.
Wow.
Yeah. Also, I got to tell you.
Well, you just have this look on your face where you're like, ugh.
I'm eating this, but I'm not happy.
I'm not enjoying this moment.
How dare you with your nutritional value?
Let me add some fat and meat to this to make it better.
Also, not a fan of the vinaigrettes, raspberry, balsamics.
So vinaigrettes flat out, not even if they're fruity?
Definitely not if it's fruity.
Yeah.
Definitely not if it's fruity, because I feel like the fruit ends up overwhelming it. Also, I would say, well, I got to tell you, is like an Italian dressing is really, like, I'm all right with it.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
I mean, but really for me, it's the Caesar.
Yeah.
Caesar dressing. It's got a nice kick.
So is it more about the dressing?
Yeah.
Than it is about the food, the actual salad?
Well, it's about the dressing and the lettuce.
Okay.
And sort of the simplicity of it.
I get
to cut up the lettuce, I toss the dressing on there, and whatever I want it to be accompanied, and I'm done with the salad, and now I can eat it.
Okay. So it's convenience too.
So it's also convenience.
Okay.
So I just said I was a foodie, and then I hit people with like the lamest
I'm
salad
simple.
On earth, right? But yes. Hey, what about you?
I would say on a regular basis it's probably mushrooms.
Wait, you're a vegetarian, though.
Yeah.
You eat vegetables all day.
Yeah.
And so that the healthiest thing you eat is a mushroom?
Yeah.
How's that possible?
Well, I would say that, like, it changes. So, okay. I mean, today, like, I have potatoes and beans and corn all mixed together with, like, a taco seasoning kind of style for a taco salad with salsa.
Okay.
But, I mean, mushrooms are pretty much, like, almost every day.
I love mushrooms
yeah
too.
And like mushrooms are they soak up whatever you put them
in,
which is rad.
That's the best part
right?
I know.
So if you want to dunk them in soy sauce,
totally
some
agree.
Kind of, if you take a salad dressing, if you take anything, any kind of liquidy nonsense you want to add, if I wanted to soak my mushrooms in wine and cook them, I could.
People would, do all the
that
time.
That would make me a super foodie, I think.
People do all
right?
the time.
That'd
yeah,
fancy.
That anything you
That'd
cook in
really
wine
fancy.
Makes you an instant foodie.
Yeah, right? it
if
does.
If you're cooking with wine.
Truffle oil.
Truffle oil. I mean, if you're cooking with that stuff, that's you're an instant foodie.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, mushrooms are good.
Mushrooms are good. And it's something, too, where like you can get as many mushrooms as you need for whatever kind of thing, and then they can be stuffed into any food.
They have so many different types of mushrooms, like the portobellos and then the...
You've got your
shiitake,
yes,
which is my favorite.
You've
name
got your little button mushrooms that are adorable.
Yes, they are.
There's this one mushroom, I don't know what they're called, but they have these really long, thin little stalks and tiny little caps. I call them devil mushrooms because I ate them once and I got food poisoning.
Ooh.
So they're devil mushrooms, and I never have eaten them again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I avoid devil mushrooms.
Okay.
It was not a good night.
No, that sounds terrible.
It was terrible.
That sounds terrible.
Yeah, I thought I was going to die.
I do love mushrooms, and I totally agree with you. You can put those bad boys in almost anything, and they really work.
Yeah.
Speaking of really working, I don't know.
Or mushrooms and bad
to,
boys.
Trying to make a sweet, awesome segue. Couldn't quite do it. We will toss it to our interview with Julie Humphrey, the Community Relations and Media Manager for Second Harvest Northwest. Here is our conversation with our good friend, Julie. All right, we're here with Julie Humphreys, the Community Relations and Media Manager for Second Harvest Inland Northwest. Julie, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us. We very much appreciate it.
We know you pretty well because we've been out to Second Harvest a few times and done a couple of promotions with you. But can you give a little history about Second Harvest to the listeners and what it is that you do for the community?
Absolutely. And let me just say, we love that you've been out here and been to our facility, our food distribution center, and our kitchen, and done programs with us. I think that you guys have a great understanding of what we do and how you guys are helping us. So we are a food distribution center. Most people always say food bank, but technically we are the food bank for the food bank. So we resource and distribute food to 250 food banks and meal sites throughout Eastern Washington and North Idaho.
Wow.
So, you know, there has to be a place where all those donated items, food items, come into. All that fresh produce from the local growers and farmers comes into here. We sort it, get it back out to areas all throughout Eastern Washington, North Idaho, where people need food.
Yeah.
So it's really that simple. A food distribution center is physically what we are. We're really a hunger relief organization.
Yeah.
So our mission is to get more food to the people who need it most.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
And what areas do you serve?
So all of Eastern eastern Washington and five counties in North Idaho.
Okay.
So we go all the way to the Cascades, and then we have a partner or sister food bank under the Feeding America umbrella. That's our kind of national hunger relief organization. So Food Lifeline in the Seattle area does what we do over in eastern Washington.
Okay.
They do that over in western Washington.
Awesome.
So, yeah, it's the entire state. We do also have the entire eastern part of the state. We also have a food distribution center in Pasco because it just makes sense. We grow so much, you know, in that Columbia Basin area that we're not going to grow that, ship it all the way up to Spokane, and then distribute it. So we've got a facility there where we distribute so much of the beautiful fresh produce that's grown in that area.
So you know, a lot has been talked about, you know, with regards to the economy improving but then there's a huge argument for the fact that it's improving for some people and not for others. It seems like those who have been who were close to the edge pre 2008, 9, and 10 have now essentially gone over the edge, and visits to food banks seem to be increasing. What does food insecurity look like in the area you serve?
In our area, it's very similar to the state, and we use Map the Meal Gap, which is a great resource of food insecurity throughout our country. And in Washington State, the percent is 11.5. That's statewide. So 11.5% of the population in Washington State is food insecure. And the definition we like to use for food insecurity is people who lack the resources for and access to enough nutritious food to live a healthy lifestyle. So, you know, there's many definitions. Food insecurity is kind of a little bit of a catch term, but it really means they don't know where their next meal is coming from.
Right.
And they don't have resources for or access to good, nutritious food.
Yeah.
So 11.5% equates to about 1 in 8 people throughout our state. And that holds true. It's a little bit higher statewide. Right here in our region, the eastern part of Washington State, it's 1.8 exactly. It's 1.8, you know, and some change throughout the rest of the state. But everywhere, it includes 1 in 5 children. I think that's really critical to mention, the children that are in that percentage.
Right. That was the next question I was going to have. It looks much different for kids, right? People don't sometimes get the idea that a lot of the people visiting these food banks are children with their adult parents.
Right. And just because you may not see them in line because they're in school or they're not, you know, the parents aren't bringing them to the food bank lines, although they do bring, you see a lot of younger children that are home with their folks. But 40% of the people we serve, according to our statistics, are children. That's huge. And they're you know, young people who on their own, they can't do this. And they're no fault of their own. They're from families who can't quite make ends meet. And you talked about, yes, there are food bank lines increasing now, even though we're in a, you know, quote, recovery. What's happened is people went back to work after 2008, 2009, and they got jobs, but they may have got lower paying jobs. And they still are having to work two jobs, many families, to make ends meet. So, yes, they are now, when they turn to a food bank for a short term during that economic crash, now they're more consistently using the food banks because they can't seem to get out of the poverty that it takes you know, to have an income that works for them.
Yeah.
And also in the Map the Meal Gap numbers that we see for the state, I think this is really telling, is 11.5% of the population is food insecure. Amongst that 11.5%, 35% make a little bit too much money to qualify for food stamps and other government assistance.
That's
a huge percent.
So they're just relying on places like the food bank, really.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're not a government agency. We depend 100% on private donations and community support and volunteers. So we're a second tier. We do much less food distribution than SNAP programs and other state programs, but there's a huge need for it still.
Wow.
So one of the things that we got to do as the CFD, of course, was to come out to Second Harvest and check out your facilities. And we had the privilege to film part of our leadership breakfast video in your facility called The Kitchen. Can you talk about The Kitchen and why it's important to have a facility like that?
Well, we are very proud of our kitchen, and because it's such a natural. I mean, we deal in food. We deal in 31 yeah. million pounds of food a year. That's what we resource distribute out to the communities. But what we find is when we hand somebody something like butternut squash or, let's say, lentils, because we grow so many lentils in the Palouse area, they will often say, no, thank you, because they don't know what to do with them.
Yeah. Sure.
And there's, I mean, the average population doesn't know what to do with lentils. Right. Home, you know, people that are food insecure or people in poverty. So we thought, okay, we've got to be part of changing the way people eat. We don't want to just feed people. We want to feed them very well. And we're getting them great product. But the next step is, how do we get them to help them to know how to use that product? So the kitchen was just a great, we built it about 3.5 years ago. And we now offer, it's full all the time with classes.
Yeah.
We hold free community classes for people in need. Oh, it's a beautiful state-of-the-art kitchen, and we wanted to make it that way, too, all through donated material, we have to say, which is beautiful, so that people have a great experience in this kitchen. And they, no matter what situation they're living in their homes, you know, whether they've got a tiny little apartment and barely a cooktop, this allows them to come in, have a great experience. We have guest chefs that donate their time. We have James Beard Award-nominated chefs that come in here, one in particular, Chef Laurent, who teaches a class every month because he wants to.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's a top French chef, but he comes in here and teaches the basics to people in need.
Mm-hmm.
And those classes have really filled up. We teach, I'm going to say 3 or 4 a week, what we call community classes. And they're free to anyone in need, anyone that uses our food bank services. And it's really grown, the participation. You know, oftentimes you have people in poverty have other barriers to getting here to our food distribution center. You know, it's that you matter. I'm looking at you. I'm seeing you. I'm not just handing you food. I'm invested in your life, and I want you to be able to take that next best step towards self-sufficiency. Because if you're always hungry and not eating well, you can't think about getting a better job. You can't think about getting out of addiction or whatever you're stuck in life, because that hunger takes over, and that's your number one, you know, that basic need shadows everything. So this allows people to take steps and start thinking about what's next, and we've had some wonderful results. And what I love is we do paid classes also, or four paid classes, I should say. So you can come here. Last night we had a very fun, we call it, we have a series of classes in the kitchen that people pay to come do. And it was called Volun Yoga. So you volunteer, and then we did yoga in the kitchen.
Wow.
And then we had some snacks. It was really fun. I did the yoga, too. It was just
That's awesome.
And we also do Volun Vino, where you sort food for a while.
Nice.
You have a wine demonstration, sample some wines. We have Volun Beer, where you sample some beer.
That's cool.
Why not Volun Yoga? And so we have a whole series of classes that are fun for the public. They're only like $25.
Yeah.
And people love it. First of all, they sort food for an hour.
Yeah.
And then they go back to the kitchen and learn a little bit about Second Harvest and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think knowing that the $25 they donate to come to that class allows someone else who can't afford a cooking class to take one for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So really, you're just doing a donation and helping someone out. It's a great concept.
Yeah.
Nice.
Sometimes I like to ask sort of a bigger sort of more existential question, and that is the idea of like the future with regards to food insecurity. Do you see a space where the current trend could change, and what do you think are some of the things that could help it change?
Wow, that is a big question.
Yeah.
So the question there is, can we end hunger?
Yeah, basically.
Can we find a solution to hunger?
Right.
We work toward it. We're optimistic. We are, maybe I can best talk about a program that we're starting, and it's something new that will hopefully get us toward that. We're focusing on child hunger. We figure if we can help turn that around, and especially because it's 40% of the clients that we serve are children, that will make great steps toward helping families down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So we have acquired a building right next to our current building here and have a capital campaign underway right now to expand, because we've grown out of our space. We have what's called a Bite to Go program for children, where we provide shelf-stable food and really easy food to eat to kids in the schools to take home on the weekend.
Right.
Otherwise, their last meal would have been Friday at lunch in school. until Monday morning when they get breakfast at school. So if they're coming from households that are really in dire straits as far as mom and dad are either working the weekends, maybe they're addicted, incarcerated, whatever the case is, they're not able to provide food for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we're expanding that Bite to Go program and our other ways that we get food to children, which is through our food banks and food pantries, our partner agencies there.
Yeah.
So we have created what we call, thanks to a generous funder, the Wolf Family Child Hunger Solution Center. And it's more space, more gives us more room for volunteers to process more food to get it out to more people in need.
Mm-hmm.
So really, the food is there. I mean, that's what, and you guys know this from your study of it, something like between 30 and 40% of all the food produced and grown in this country never makes it to a table.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Food waste is a huge, huge problem.
Right.
So we have food to get to people that need it. We just have to have better ways to route that food to get it and get it to people in time. And so one of them is through our with this our child center here to really increase the access that kids have
to food. Very cool.
So, we keep doing it. Each person that comes out of the food bank system, that's a victory. And people don't want to be
right
in the food bank system permanently. Nobody likes to go stand in line at a food bank.
Right.
It's humbling. It's hard to ask for help. But people aren't doing this saying, oh, good, this is the way I want to live. I don't want to ever have to go to a grocery store. I just want to hang out at the food bank and at our mobile markets. That's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking to get out of it. And we find that people do come in for a time and then they're able to leave. And that's the goal. And that's when will we be able to not be needed? It's a long ways off because it's a complicated issue. It's tied to poverty. It's tied to wages. It's tied to so many, different things, homelessness, addiction. That there's no, I can't tell you the magic bullet to put us out of business, but I think we're doing the right thing targeting children as a good start for this next 10 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
So Second Harvest has a newsletter, quarterly newsletter, and in the spring newsletter, there was a volunteer spotlight that focused on drivers. So can you talk about transportation and the drivers and how Second Harvest gets food to food banks?
Absolutely. That is our biggest cost. So, sometimes when people donate to Second Harvest, they go, oh, we're buying food. That's not the case. All our food is donated, except a very small percentage that's with a senior program that has to be, and a purchase program like our Bite to Go for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
But well over 90% of all our food that comes in here is donated food. But then there's the cost to get it out to those 250 agencies throughout Eastern Washington or North Idaho. So transportation is our biggest cost, and storage of food, safe storage of it here in a facility that has refrigeration. Those trucks are all refrigerated. So we have trucks that go out every day and deliver to the rural areas and just even around Spokane, wherever they can go, North Idaho. That's a big cost. And then we count on volunteer drivers to help us with a lot of things here locally that take, that way, commercial driving, there's a huge need for commercial drivers. There's a lot of regulations around that, and they're expensive to hire. We do have, obviously, a number of commercial drivers, but we also have volunteers who are taking our trucks and going just around town and doing everything from delivering food donation boxes to a business that wants to hold a food drive to a lot of them help us out with our food rescue program. And our grocery rescue program is a wonderful program where we pick up, let's say, produce that's maybe a day or so away from expiration or over-purchased at an area grocery store. We pick that up, get it here, get it right back out to people in need the next day. So we count on volunteer drivers to help us with that as well. It really fills that, just kind of that hole there where we can't have commercial drivers doing everything.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And fuel costs are, where we spend well above $5,000 a month.
Right.
A week just on fuel getting
holy cow
to get around here. So, that's one of our biggest costs.
Yeah. That kind of segues perfect into another thing that you partner with the Combined Fund Drive on, and that is Well Fed, Well Read. Because sometimes you use those drivers to drop off and pick up bins from different state agencies, and hopefully one day we can even get some other public entities involved for the promotion that we run in April. You are the second county in the state to actually embark on this. We're looking for a third in Bellingham next year. Can you talk a little bit about the partnership between CFD and Second Harvest and the United Way for the Well Fed, Well Read that happens in April?
Absolutely. It's a great concept, and we love that you have come to us with this and had a great idea, because it really brings two things together that are critical. First of all, kids have to be fed, and if they're well fed, their brains work.
Yes.
And yeah.
We can work on the education.
Yeah.
I mean, every teacher in any school will tell you, if kids aren't fed well, they can't focus, they can't study at school. So this is kind of another effort at that, and you know, we send those boxes out to the agencies. People donate food, and they donate books, too.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's a natural, and then through United Way, you know, they get the books out, we get the food out, and we're hitting, it's kind of that one extra. It's not just feeding them, but taking that next step.
Yep.
And that really demands, we count on multiple agencies and collaborations to be able to do that, because we don't deal in books and education.
Yep.
But if we partner with an agency that does, and that's part of what they do, then it just enhances what we do by serving food. So we love partnerships like that that broaden what we do. And we have that in our schools when we do our Bite to Go program. The people that administrate that in the schools, when they hand those kids the sack of food for the weekend, there's also many volunteers that bring the sacks to the schools that then stay there and either read to a child at lunchtime.
Oh, cool.
Talk to them on the playground. It's that one next step that matters so much, in that personal communication. I mean, reading is a great way to mm-hmm. have that one-on-one communication and
yeah.
to tell someone you care.
Yep.
So it really adds another element that we so much appreciate.
Awesome.
I'm amazed at what the state agencies do and how much you are able to donate to us.
That's so cool.
And we are so grateful. I mean, I don't know if you want to get into dollar amounts here on this program, but
no.
It is a very generous donation
yeah.
That you give to Second Harvest, and I know we're just one of many mm-hmm. organizations that you help support. So
yeah.
can we talk dollars?
Yeah, yeah. Please.
And can I just thank you so much for $11,500 in 2018?
Yeah, yeah.
That is huge. And we take every dollar, and we can provide 5 meals.
Wow.
So let's do the math here. We should be able to do this in our head. 11,500 times 5. That is providing a lot of meals.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's great.
We are eternally grateful. That would be about 57,500 if I'm doing
yeah.
my math right.
I think that's close.
And that's just what we're able to leverage. So
that's
it's
really
critical
cool.
to those funds that you bring to us.
We really have some great, enthusiastic volunteers out in Spokane. It's also one of the places that has the most continuity. So we see the same volunteers volunteering year over year in their state offices. So you have this incredible wealth of knowledge and enthusiasm for raising money for nonprofits. And what's really neat about Spokane is that a lot of the folks who give end up giving locally into that area. And I think that that's really one of the coolest parts about the partnership with CFD and all of the nonprofits in that area.
And I would agree. I've been fortunate enough to go to some of your events and meet some of the state employees that head up, you know, the food drive efforts or the volunteer mm-hmm. efforts in their particular organizations. And they're enthusiastic. They're invested.
Yep.
We've been around a long time. We've been here since 1971.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a very good reputation and name.
Yes.
And so a lot of people can identify. They've been to our facility. They've helped sort food. And I think the other part that makes it really easy is everybody can relate to hunger.
Mm-hmm.
Every human being has experienced hunger on some level, whether it's just between breakfast and lunch or whether it's chronic hunger that lasts for weeks or months. And so I think it's something that you can say, wow, how would I feel if I didn't have enough food?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if that were my number one concern every day, is how am I going to feed myself and how am I going to feed my kids?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think just, you know, what we do is well received, and people understand that people aren't just looking for a handout.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about, oh, is there any abuse? We don't ask for proof of residency or proof of income at our mobile markets, which is our one avenue for direct service. normally it goes through our, most of our food, the high percentage, the vast majority of it goes through our partner agencies. And they sometimes have qualifications that you, you know, need to do just to make sure everybody's getting their fair share, you know, of food distributed from a neighborhood pantry. But for the most part, we try to make it as easy as possible so that people don't feel like, oh my gosh, there's so much paperwork and so many hoops to jump through to get food. We make it very easy because it's, again, it's hard and it's humbling to ask for something for free. So, and I think state employees get that. Many people tell us they like to help out. People that give a lot to Second Harvest often have been people who have needed help in the past. And that's really a beautiful thing to be giving back.
Right. I noticed that a lot with, especially with nonprofits like food banks or hunger related. There are people that I have talked to that give to the local food bank in their area. And when you get into the conversation with them, there's a lot of folks who at one point had to use the food bank, had a good experience with it, right? It's never great, like you said, because you are humbled and going, but also felt like they were taken care of. And then once they got back on their feet, they had always kept that note in the back of their mind that, like, they had gotten treated with respect. And so they want to reciprocate that. That seems to be a general theme with a lot of folks who give to food banks.
Yeah, we very much see that, absolutely. And it doesn't take much to get to the point where you need that help.
I absolutely.
Mean, not very many people have, you know, a year's worth of salary tucked away to live if they lose their job or if they have a medical emergency that drains them. And it's the first thing to go is food, because you can't not pay your rent or your mortgage. You can't not put gas in the car to get to, you know, even what might be a low-paying job. But you can say, you know what, I'm going to skip a meal today.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes, I'll skip 2 meals a week.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden it's 3, and then all of a sudden you're in the food insecurity category. So it doesn't take a whole lot to get there, and I think people can relate to that.
Yep. So Julie, let's say someone hears the podcast and they want to start giving to Second Harvest. Can you talk a little bit? You did already, but can you articulate a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
So the financial donations keep us running and keep us able to get food out to the community, to all of Eastern Washington, to rural communities, to urban communities throughout the eastern part of the state and 5 counties in North Idaho. And those funds allow us to get gas in the trucks to get the food out, to keep this building, this 85,000 square foot, you know, refrigerated building where we take safety standards very seriously, and we have a wonderful safety record of, you know, we want to give people safe food and food that's really good, and we're able to accomplish that. So the dollar that you donate, we can translate into 5 meals.
Wow.
So it really is critical. We are completely run by, you know, by community donations. I apologize if you're hearing a buzz here. and we absolutely, you know, that's how we, it's a community-run organization.
Yeah.
And then the other piece that's critical to help with is volunteering. We have 8,000 volunteers a year between this facility and our facility in Pasco. That's huge, but if you think about it, we're doing 31 million pounds of food. I wish I could give you a good visual. I've tried to come up with everything, like it's so many semi-trucks or trains, loads of food, but it's really hard to get a visual. Just know 31 million pounds of food is a boatload of food. And to sort that, because we get so much in bulk from farmers, big bins of potatoes and super sacks of apples and pears, you know, the farmers are donating that. They don't have the capacity to sort it from these big sacks into 5-pound bags that you can hand to someone in need.
Mm-hmm.
So our volunteers are in here three different shifts a day, sorting. Right now we've got kids in there, a kids group, a school group, doing pears, putting them in 5-pound bags, sorting out the bad pears, because there are sometimes ones that are bruised or that aren't edible or aren't nice for human consumption. Those go in a separate bin. They do not get wasted. They end up at the hog farm. So we don't waste anything.
Okay.
The pears end up, or apples end up with the farmers, and they much appreciate that. But we do that because we don't want to hand someone a subpar product.
Right.
We want to hand them a beautiful bag of apples or bag of potatoes.
Yeah.
So volunteers are critical, and then volunteer drivers and people that help us with food drives and all that. So so I broadened your definition of donation. The financial donations are critical, but yeah, the helping and the volunteering is just absolutely
I think that's pretty important too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So before we go, do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight?
Oh, we always like to highlight our kitchen programs. They go throughout the summer, and we do summer kids camp. June is here, so summer is here, and we will have three different series of summer cooking classes for kids. And that's a week long, or actually 4 days, Monday through Thursday. Great experience, a couple hours in the kitchen for kids. That's a for-pay class. So kids sign up, parents send them here, they learn some cooking skills, they go home and harass their parents about what they know.
Yep.
And challenge their parents about vegetables that they may not eat at home.
Yeah.
And those classes, again, help pay for our other classes, which are free to children in need. So a lot in the summer, we do a lot of kids' cooking classes, and that's something I like to highlight coming up for the summertime.
Excellent.
Right on.
Excellent.
And then our mobile markets, I should say, those just increase, and that is where we take a big semi-truck full of 8,000 to 10,000 pounds of food out to everywhere throughout the state. We have a whole map of it on our website, and our website is 2-harvest.org, and you can go to mobile markets, food distributions, and see when the truck is coming to your area. We're just able to increase the number that we do in the summer because it's easier to get around,
yeah,
the roads are better, and we get that fresh produce right out to people that need it, and we get so much of it in the summer that it's a really great shopping experience. We set it up like a farmer's market. People go around the truck and choose what they want, and they have help getting it to their car, and we try and have a high protein item there as well. Those mobile markets are really a nice way for people in need to get food.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Julie, it is always a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking a little bit about Second Harvest and what it does for the community, and I'm sure we'll be seeing you soon.
Well, I hope so, because we think you guys are really fun, and we love it when you come over here and play in our kitchen. Last time you did a little cooking demonstration, and I think you were a head chef, weren't you?
I was the show's host. I was the Ted Allen of Chopped, and then our we had our competitors. It was awesome. And I have to tell you, the judges, they were pretty good. They knew what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm. We've got some very seasoned foodies around here that run our kitchen program.
Yeah.
So they're going to challenge you on every level, from your cooking ability to your education around nutrition education to your knowledge of nutrition education.
Yeah, that was great.
We take it very seriously, and we like to make it fun, too, because food should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it should be fun as well as a basic need. You should be able to enjoy it and mm-hmm. have community around it.
Yep.
And food is just such a foundational thing that it's a joy to work in an organization where that's what we're providing. So
yeah.
We love you guys. Thank you. Thank you for
your presentation
and for your time here with us.
Yeah.
And for giving us a little bit of voice on this podcast today.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye now.
Okay, so that was our really cool conversation with Julie Humphreys, the Community Relations and Media Manager for Second Harvest. She's just a really cool lady.
She is, yeah.
I like her a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
They always have their doors open to any kooky activity that the Combined Fund Drive wants to do.
That's true.
and they just have a really great energy over there. It's really neat to see.
Yeah, and it's also great that not only does she know her stuff, mm-hmm. but it seems that everybody who works at Second Harvest or who interacts with them is extraordinarily knowledgeable about what's happening and
why. Absolutely. You don't have anybody walking around, looking around like they don't know what's going
on.
They're tuned in.
Highly functioning machine.
Yes. I mean, and the facility is something else. If you're out in Spokane, see if you can't go make your way to the facility. It's pretty impressive.
They do tours, I think, yeah?
They do, and they should. I mean, the place is unbelievable. Yeah. We may even have local coordinator trainings out at that facility.
Oh, that would be great, yeah.
So that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and just, I mean, the kitchen itself, like having that available to have classes, whether they're for people who wouldn't be able to afford cooking classes or people who can, like that yoga class and the wine and the beer.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool.
That's super cool.
That's really rad.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. Yeah. You have facts and figures for me?
I have facts and figures, but I also have some trivia.
Trivia!
Okay, so because it's food, and we've talked about food, and we've talked about harvesting and farming and food insecurity.
We've talked about really anything you can do with food.
Anything you can do with food. Yeah, so we've talked about this, but I don't know that we've really talked about healthy eating on a budget.
Oh, okay.
So I wanted to go with this approach. First, I was reading some blogs.
You were reading blogs?
I was. You know, the internet, vast wealth of information.
Did you use your AOL dial-up?
Yeah, I totally did.
To read some blogs?
At work, I... healthy eating tips on a budget, right? So, Julie had mentioned cooking classes where they have things like lentils. Lentils are a big deal. They're grown in our state.
Yes.
So using something like lentils, beans, cheaper sources of protein, eggs. I like to call it Quino because of that one commercial.
Yes,
but
that
quinoa.
Great Bud Light commercial.
Yeah.
Quino.
But using cheaper protein sources instead of meat for each meal.
Okay.
You can buy a bag of lentils, the name brand, store brand kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not even a dollar.
Oh, wow.
And then also bulk food sections have things like beans and dried lentils and things like that. So using cheaper protein sources, buying produce when it's in season. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
A lot of people who can't afford to buy food, they buy produce whenever it's there. Produce is really readily available in grocery stores very often, but it's cheaper when it's in season.
Yeah.
Of course, coupons, good idea. And then staying away from the inner aisles of the grocery store. That's where all the marketable food that you see on the TV.
Yeah.
That's really where that lives.
Like the Kraft macaroni and cheeses.
Yeah, the
and
macaroni
such.
And cheeses, the big name brand cereals, the snacks, the Go-Gurts, that kind of stuff, right? And then going to a place like a cheaper food discount store, places like Shop and Hops or the dollar stores, going there and getting things like condiments and pantry staples, oils, vinegar, spices. It's a way to save some
cash.
Cool. But I wanted to ask you about healthy foods that are under a dollar for a serving. Okay.
Great. This is perfect. Yeah. You ask me about healthy foods.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's funny, right?
All right. Let's do it.
So I want you to name. Now, this is a list I have in front of me.
This is like The Price is Right almost.
Yeah.
Okay.
Except you're not bidding and you're not going to win anything.
Oh, well, obviously.
Yeah.
Why would I win anything? That's silly.
Because I don't give prizes.
Yes.
So this is a list of 44 healthy foods under a dollar. Now, under a dollar is the serving size, right?
Yeah.
I want you to name 10 of these foods.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Healthy foods.
Healthy foods under a dollar.
Under a dollar. Corn.
Let's see. I believe corn is on my list.
Let's see. Corn's got to be on the list.
I should have made this smaller. Corn's not on the list.
Oh, my gosh. You got to be kidding me. Are you serious?
Corn's not on my list.
How about, I was going to go with, like, broccoli.
Okay, broccoli.
Broccoli's on there. How about carrots?
Broccoli is on here.
Yeah!
Broccoli is about 50 cents for half a cup.
Okay, and then what about carrots?
Carrots is
there.
Also on here.
Yes.
So carrots are about 50 cents each.
Excellent.
So you got two, right?
Okay. We just hit on lentils, right? Is that a thing?
We did hit on lentils.
But I can't imagine that's like a dollar.
Dude, yeah.
It's on there?
Oh, yeah.
Sweet.
12 cents per cup.
Okay. That's three. Yeah. You want me to name 10?
Yeah, so give me 7.
Okay. Hold on. How about... And we're talking healthy, so I assume rice is not on there.
Let's see. I believe that as a whole grain, brown rice is on here.
Boom!
18 cents per a quarter cup.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's four.
That is four. You're doing really good.
I'm doing good.
Yeah, for not being quote unquote a healthy eater.
I know. Yeah. I know. I see them there. I see them as I walk through.
I see you in the store and I walk on by.
Yeah. How about tomatoes?
Tomatoes are, in fact, on here.
Yes!
So on this particular list, they have canned tomatoes.
Okay.
50 cents for half a cup.
Okay.
Yeah.
Canned tomatoes. That would not be my game.
You would go with the actual ripe.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're going to, you know.
If you're going tomato, you go with the ones that are good.
Okay. Green beans.
Let's see.
Okay, got to be on this list. Green beans are like the veggie nobody wants.
No, they're not on the list.
What?
Nope.
Oh, my gosh. So how many do I got? I got five?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, you know, like beans.
Yeah.
Beans. Okay.
Yeah, so six. Pinto beans are on this list as are black beans. So pinto beans are about 30 cents for half a cup.
Got it.
Black beans are the same price.
Lettuce would not be on this list. It is actually surprisingly a bit more expensive than I thought. Is it on the list?
It is. Let's see if they've got it here. Mm-hmm. Tell me, internet list. Spinach is on the list.
Oh, spinach. Wow, yeah. Spinach made the
list. So 50 cents per cup.
Okay. Cauliflower.
Say that again?
Cauliflower.
I is like that, it.
Is that the wrong way to say it?
No, but you did really pronounce it. Cauliflower.
Cauliflower.
It's not on the list.
Okay. All right. So give me some ones that are on this list.
Eggs.
Eggs?
19 cents per egg.
Oh, serving size. Yeah. Okay.
So even though you're spending like, what, $2 to $4 on a thing of eggs, I mean, they
one
are.
One egg is
not too bad. Tofu is 20 cents per ounce.
That surprises me.
Yeah. Chicken breasts are 75 cents.
Oh, see, I didn't even
go
into the protein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've got things like garbanzo beans.
Uh-huh.
I didn't mention those. You did say beans, but 30 cents per pound. Canned tuna is also 30 cents per ounce.
Oh, wow. They're saying that's healthy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If it's not in oil, I'm sure it's healthier, but it's supposed to be good for your brain.
Okay.
Again, quino.
Quino, obviously.
60 cents per quino. Solid quino. Bananas are 50 cents a banana.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then you've got canned pumpkin.
Oh, wow. That was not one I'd put on there.
No, yeah. And also, I don't know that a lot of people really get what you do with pumpkin other than make pie.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I've only heard it in a curry and a pie.
Yeah,
those are the
much.
Two things I've ever heard it in.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's it. So that's 75 cents per half cup.
Cool.
Then beets.
Beets. Dwight Schrute would be proud.
He would be proud. He'd also be, you know, raking in the cash.
He would.
35 cents each for a beet.
Yeah.
Then we also have drinks.
Okay. Oh, we even went with drinks.
Yeah. Coffee is 40 cents per 16-ounce cup brewed at home.
Good. I'm glad.
Yeah. That's something else that's too was mentioned in the tips for stuff. Mm-hmm. Make things at home. If you are, like, poor with your money but not poor with your time, then utilize your time to make things at home so you can save your money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I personally need to be better at that, actually.
Yeah?
Making more things at home. Yeah. I'm a fairly good chef. I should make more things at home.
Okay.
That's just a...
Should I start asking, like, every day?
No.
Philip, did you make things
no,
at home?
No, you shouldn't, because it gets bad, and I don't.
Okay.
Well, that was good. That was eye-opening.
And you did really well.
Thank you. I mean, I got five. I mean, you know, I did okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't like great. You don't have to patronize me. I did fine.
That was 50%.
That's an F. I need to be better. My mother tells me I need to be better.
Too bad I don't have a red pen.
Shout out to my mom. Hopefully you hear the show.
Hello, Mrs. Kerrigan.
Yeah, hello. So that was our interview with Julie. It was a great interview. Thank you so much, Julie, for coming on. Hit you with some upcoming events that we have. So we'll do a recap first. We actually just did our campaign leader trainings. Thank you to the campaign leaders who actually came out and learned more about what it is they're going to be doing. Great energy at each one of the trainings. We do have, in less than a month, it will be our birthday month, the 35th anniversary of the Combined Fund Drive. And much like our marketing person, Jerrica Ferguson, we've done a month worth of activities for our birthday.
Oh, look at that.
So we'll start off with a really really cool vintage t-shirt sale promotion at the beginning of the month, and it'll run through the first couple weeks of the month. It'll culminate around a birthday party that we're hoping will happen on July 10th. We still will work out the details, but the party will be ostensibly a film festival for some of the best films. Folks will have a chance to vote on their favorite Leadership Breakfast films, the kooky ones that the CFD does very soon.
Yeah.
And then we also have the Tacoma Rainiers July 19th game that raises money for the Combined Fund Drive. So there'll be some fun things during our birthday month that we're really looking forward to actually being a part of. And then, of course, we'll have some trainings in August, but we're recruiting the local coordinators now. If you're listening and you're not actually a volunteer, consider doing so. It's really fun work to do.
Yeah.
But that is it for today's podcast. We really appreciate Julia coming on the show, and loved talking about food. See you later.
Bye.